This is Radio Influence.
When you are looking for the best Bucs coverage, why not go to someone who's actually been on the field?
B-U-C-C-A-N-E-E-R-S. Go Bucs!
This is the only podcast for the Buccaneers by a Buccaneer. You are in the trenches with former Buccaneers offensive lineman Ian Beckles on Radio Influence.
Hello, everybody. This is Ian Beckles, and welcome to In the Trenches. It is a joyous Monday. The Buccaneers get it done yesterday against the Giants at Raymond James Stadium. Packed house. A lot of Giants fans there. That's just the way it is. It's never going to change. I had Roger and JP from 102.5. They do their show from New York, but it's a local show. I had them on my show yesterday from the stadium. They are Giants fans, and they were commenting on how many Giants fans are out here. And I just let them know. I said, listen, you can go to Kansas City or Philadelphia, Green Bay, you know, a lot of different cities. Nobody moves there. Okay. Nobody moves to Philadelphia. I've never heard somebody say, I'm moving to Philadelphia. Never heard that one time, unless it's for business. People come to Tampa just because. So, I mean, there's a lot of people here from New York because they left New York. Okay. Because we live in paradise. So that's just the way it's going to be. And it's not like it's diminishing what our fan base is. But listen, if you're a New York Giants fan, through and through, which there's lots of, and your team comes and plays at Raymond James Stadium, you know what you're going to do? Pay a lot of money for a ticket. That's the only time you're going to get a chance to see your team, maybe in the next few years. So that's just the way it's going to be. We know we have a lot of Lightning fans out there, and they're still going to have a lot of other fans from other cities there, and that's just the way it is. We live in paradise. So the Buccaneers get it done yesterday. I've been pretty damn good on my predictions to this point. I hope you guys are all listening on 102.5 on Sundays, 11 to 1. I do my pregame show. And the first week, when the Buccaneers didn't play on the first week, obviously, when they played Mike Glennon, I didn't say the Bears. When they played Mike Glennon, I said, pick the Bucs. Bucs are going to win going away. They did. Vikings, I said, I don't like that matchup. It's tough to be on the road in a dome. I said, you know, I'm going with the Vikings. The Vikings won. Yesterday, I thought it was going to be, I didn't have a side. I said, I don't know what side. This is a tough one. It's a coin toss, but I think the Buccaneers figure out a way to get it done. And they get it done. Despite their kicker not being able to hit the broadside of a barn. Now, you know, as a player, you know, you can't really worry about your kicker, okay? Because you got to worry about what's happening in, you know, in your little bubble. So if you're an offensive lineman and you're in there on field goal, you just got to worry about blocking the guy across from you, and the field goal kicker has to worry about making the kick. Nick Foles yesterday, if he misses that field goal, his stuff may be packed by the time he gets to his locker. He would have been done. And you know, some people think that it was kind of gutsy, you know, that Dirk Cutter went out there and even put him out there. But when you get at the end of the game, when you have an extra point, like a field goal to win the game, if you're scared to put your field goal kicker in the game, cut him already. If he didn't want to put him in there, he should have cut him in the middle of the game. So at the end of that game, you don't want to take a chance running a football, getting a fumble. That happens often. If you can get a kick, like an extra point is still a 90-something percent kick. If you can't stick your kicker out there in that situation, then get rid of him. So he was not one kick, he was 4 feet away from losing his job. Now, I'm not going to boo-hoo for him, because if he lost his job, he'd have got paid for the whole year. So boo-hoo. Could have been worse than that. And then he'd probably get picked up by somebody else, and then they pay him the whole salary. So we'd get two salaries. Funny thing, right? You're allowed to double dip one time in the NFL. They call it double dipping. I sure wanted to double dip. I never really got a chance to, unfortunately. So the Buccaneers yesterday, and I'm going to say this, in a win, it makes evaluating the whole game that much better. If you lose, it's a problem. If you win, that's okay. We won despite. But, you know, as a player, when you're looking at the film, and as a team, when you're looking at the film, it really shouldn't matter whether you win or lose. You have to evaluate and break down film really the same way, win or lose. Because there's sometimes where the offensive line plays really well and the Bucks lose. And the other way around. Same with the defensive line. Yesterday I thought Gerald McCoy played literally as good as I've ever seen him play. And we've talked about statistics sometimes, and people say, well, Gerald's not about statistics. Gerald played better yesterday than his statistics. He doesn't always. Yesterday he played substantially better than his statistics. I saw him make – you don't have to get statistics to make plays. Those are two different things. If you push your lineman into the quarterback and he can't throw the ball and he throws an interception, that's a play. It's not a statistic. There's a couple times I saw Gerald hitting the quarterback as he's releasing the ball and making a difference. Now, there's times where I'm seeing, like they said, the Buccaneers led the league in pressures, but they didn't have many sacks. But they're really not making a lot of quarterbacks uncomfortable yet, okay? Other than Gerald McCoy yesterday, I didn't see that many other people really hitting the quarterback, unfortunately. And Eli Manning, we know, if Eli Manning gets hit three times in a game, he'll crumple. He will fold it up. He doesn't want no part of that. So I was happy to see Gerald McCoy play like he did yesterday. Now, I said this on my show again yesterday. You know, Gerald McCoy preys on lesser lines. And the Giants have a lesser line. They are terrible. They're terrible. They've been terrible all year. They were terrible yesterday. And Gerald was wreaking havoc. Now, let's let this be the new Gerald McCoy, because that's not how he normally plays, okay? When I watch Aaron Donald, I see Aaron Donald playing that way, usually, okay? I see Geno Atkins playing that way, usually. I want Gerald McCoy, I want that to be his usual. And that means you got to start stacking those games, you know, one after another. Offensively, I thought the play calling was substantially better yesterday, definitely than it was against Minnesota. I like Dirk Cutter as a play caller myself. There's been times where I've questioned play calling in this offense to the umpth degree, because I didn't think it was that good. I think play calling is good. I think the Bucks need to toughen up a little bit, okay, offensively. Like third and one, fourth and one, I don't know if I have the confidence that this Buccaneers offensive line is going to be flat back and push people back and get a third and one or a fourth and one. And I'm not sure Dirk Cutter is either, because I'm seeing him pitch the ball on short yardage. And when you're pitching the ball on short yardage, it's just not really saying much for the aggression of your offensive line. As an offensive lineman, I'm not trying to go sideways when it's third and one or fourth and one. So I want to see the offensive line pick it up a little bit and get a little meaner, start taking the game over a little bit. It was good to see the offensive line, which I thought played well yesterday. It was good to see them running the ball a little bit. It makes everybody's life that much easier. Jacquizz Rodgers, I think, ran hard yesterday. I don't think he's a special running back by any means. I do think running backs still are overrated. Everybody's elated that Doug Martin's coming back, and I guess everybody believes that Doug Martin is that guy who can be a difference maker. Well, Doug's got to prove that to me, because last year I didn't find Doug Martin to be a difference maker. I hope Doug Martin comes back with a little chip on his shoulder, healthy, ready to go, and ready to tote it 20 times a game. You know, Jacquizz Rodgers is a guy that, you know, you might want to give him the ball 10 times a game. Not what he's been getting. He's a change-up guy. Charles Sims, another guy, needs to touch it a couple times. Not so much out of the backfield running the ball, but maybe get him a couple screens because he's nice in the open field. But when Doug Martin gets back, we're going to be substantially deeper at that running back position, and that's never a bad thing. You can't have enough running backs. And listen, I'm not a big fan of running backs. Looking around, you saw Dalvin Cook go down yesterday. That doesn't look good. You know, when you go down and nobody's around you and you grab your knee, that's usually it for the season. I'm watching Leonard Fournette. I never thought he would be a great NFL football player. I think he's doing okay statistically. But I just don't think he has a style that's going to last very long. And there's just not a lot of go-to running backs for many years. Next year, we're going to have another batch of running backs, probably. I don't think Doug Martin will be a guy to come back next year. Jacquizz Rodgers, I think, is just a guy. You got to go out and get somebody else. And that's the way it is these days. Now, I did make a couple predictions once again yesterday in the pregame show. I thought it would be a big day for tight ends because the Giants linebacking crew was all beat up, and it was time for Jameis to start hitting our tight ends. And I was right. Cameron Brate had a pretty darn good game, although he dropped a couple balls that you got to catch. Looking at Jameis's statistics, they could have been substantially better because I thought there was three or four just flat-out drops that Jameis put on receivers. I know Mike Evans dropped one at the end of the game. That was a concentration thing. You know, I saw Cameron Brate drop one. I believe I saw O.J. Howard drop one. So there's about three or four drops in the game that could have really made Jameis Winston's statistics look that much better. The first touch, the touchdown that they had to O.J. Howard, first of all, I don't know if that's one of Dirk Cutter's concoctions, but I watched a lot of film in my day. I've never seen that play. I swear to you, I've seen. I rarely see a play that I've not seen before. I'd never seen that sequence of routes, and it was genius. And he couldn't be any further open than that. And you know, it sounds like that's a touchdown, but sometimes when you're a quarterback or you're a wide receiver, you're that wide open. Sometimes it's tough sledding. You don't know what to do with yourself because you're so darn wide open. I remember back in the day when Sam Weitz was our coach, and our fullback was Rudy Harris, and we had a play that was, I think, called Sender, where Rudy would kind of act like he was blocking, then he would take off down the field, and it worked every day in practice. And Sam White says to Rudy, there's one coaching point: don't stop running. Because, you know, when you're a running back and you're running down the middle of the field, you're wide open, you have a tendency to stop and turn and look for the ball. He goes, just don't stop running. And we're in a game, and I remember blocking, seeing Rudy go by me, and looking, not seeing anybody in the middle of the field. And I'm like, dang, he's wide open. And I saw Rudy stop and turn. And I'm like, don't. And then Vinny throws the ball. And then you got to try to adjust running backwards. Okay, so you stop and turn, and now you're trying to run, and he falls on his back. Okay, so there's nobody within 20 yards of him any which way around him. So Vinny throws a perfect ball, but he stopped running. He tries to compensate by running backwards, and he ends up falling on his back. So he comes back to the huddle, and people are laughing. I mean, it's not funny because it was a flat-out touchdown. And I go, Rudy, there was one coaching point, Rudy, just one. He looks at me, I know. And that's a long day. That's a long day when you know you have to go to meetings the next day, and you know you had a play like that. And everybody's going to be dogging you out. But when a coach tells you something like that, those are the kind of things you got to remember. Now, offensively, I thought we did some really good things. I liked the way Cameron Brate played out of the from tight end. O.J. Howard. If the Buccaneers can find out a way to run the football effectively, this offense can become really, really good. Because O.J. Howard, I believe, is a weapon. Cameron Brate is a weapon. I know DeSean Jackson is a weapon, and I know Mike Evans is a weapon, okay? If the Bucs can figure out a way to run the football and get people scared of them running the football with those two tight ends and the speed. Now, DeSean Jackson to this point, statistically, hasn't been that great. And there is one reason, and it's Jameis, straight up. I mean, DeSean Jackson is running his routes, and training camp is to kind of feel people out and, you know, judge people and measure people. Jameis can't figure out DeSean Jackson's speed yet. He can't figure it out. You know, everybody's speed in practice is going to be different than the speed in the game. But including last week when DeSean Jackson had two or three steps on the DB and when Jameis threw the ball behind DeSean for an interception, there was a good five passes yesterday that Jameis threw behind DeSean. A couple of them he caught, but if he throws them ahead of him and leads him, he's gone. Like, I've been begging for this for years. I've been begging for a receiver that can catch a slant and go to distance. go back and look at Buccaneer film and find me a receiver catch a slant and go 60 yards. Like, I literally don't know the last receiver that did it. If you said, who was it? I would have to say Joey Galloway, if anybody. But that's a long time ago. DeSean Jackson's going to do that eventually, because there was a couple plays yesterday where, and you can see that DeSean is so frustrated, because there's a good dozen plays that's been left out there on the field because him and Jameis aren't on the same page, or they're not. He's not compensating for his speed, because he's definitely open. Receivers of the NFL don't get open that much, okay? Not like that. And when they do get open like that, the quarterbacks are usually getting them the ball. So Jameis is still learning. I could still see Jameis thinking out there sometimes. And like, as a young football player, that's what you got to fight against sometimes. It's not about thinking. It's more about reacting. And I could see Jameis thinking at times. And there's times where he can't pull that trigger. And there's other times where he just may be a little too tight. Some of those short passes, it looks like he's almost guiding it and forcing it a little bit. I mean, I still love Jameis Winston's competitive nature. I love the pass he threw to Mike Evans in the end zone. If you remember preseason, they were having problems with, you know, the back shoulder fade and stuff like that. And he threw a great pass to Mike Evans early in the game. And they were having problems with that in the preseason. Now, there was a couple other ones where, you know, you want to give Mike Evans a chance. You got a big old burly, strong receiver like Mike Evans. You got to figure out a way to utilize him, that's for sure. So if the Buccaneers lost that game yesterday, there would have been panic in Mudsville. Okay, people would have been panicking, that's for sure. Okay. You know, the Giants are going to win some games this year. The Giants aren't as bad as their record at this moment. They're not a terrible football team. They're not a good football team, because they're not going to win a lot of games with that offensive line. They're going to win some games. I thought the Buccaneers were a better football team than them. So I thought the Buccaneers have been better than two of the three teams they've played so far this year. But they don't get no easier. It definitely doesn't get any easier. You know, the Bucs now are going to have to play, you know, three games in which would be 11 or 12 days. Physically, that is a son of a bitch. Like, I've never done it. I've never done a Thursday game. But what people don't realize is the Bucs played yesterday night, okay? They played yesterday night. So normally you play Sunday afternoon. They finished yesterday night. And today is just a few hours later. And in a regular week, it would make it Thursday. It's Thursday in a regular week. So by Thursday, your body's supposed to recover a little bit from the previous game. Their bodies at this point are not even, they're just numb still. They're not even sore. So it's the day after the game. Your body's not sore yet. It's still in shock. Tomorrow, which the Bucks have to give the Bucks have to give the players one day off. They have to. It's in the CBA. So it's either going to be today or tomorrow. I would probably guess that it was today. They won. They probably gave them the day off. Tomorrow they're going in, and tomorrow is like a Friday. Okay, so by Friday, normally you've had two padded practices, and then the Friday practice is kind of a slow learning type of thing. They got to go in, and they have to already know the plays. That's tough sledding. And I'm not talking about the physical part of it, because your body, you know, gets acclimated to the system and your schedule, and this throws it off completely. That Thursday, now New England has to do some traveling. And I'm not worried about New England, because New England's one of those teams that always seems to deal with adversity, although they're 2-2. They're beatable. But if you had to pick one team that you don't want to play on a short week, it would be New England. It would be New England. From coaching, from who they have at quarterback, the Buccaneers are still beat up. You know, when you're playing New England, it'd be nice to have Quan Alexander and Levante David, that's for sure. because that ball's coming out quick. That ball's coming out quick. And if the Bucks don't hit Tom Brady, you won't win. I mean, that's it. If you don't hit Eli Manning, you probably won't win. If you don't hit Tom Brady, you're going to lose. Period. Because we've not really hit any quarterbacks yet. I'm seeing some players come up and emerging that I've seen that I've been impressed with. Beckwith, when Quan comes back and Levante come back, I don't know what's going to happen with Beckwith, but I tell you what, find somewhere to put him. He's just a good football player. He's mean, he's nasty, and he has a little attitude. So maybe figure out a way to get him on the field some way, somehow. Brett Grimes is a difference maker. He was a difference maker yesterday. I mean, we're substantially better with him on the football field. I mean, he's a competitor, and we need that out there. That's extremely, extremely important to have people out there competing like that. We need some people competing like that at more positions. I saw Tanny make a couple plays yesterday. I saw Conte make a couple plays, although he's two steps late to a lot of stuff. He's two steps late to a whole lot of stuff. But defensively, I'm not going to complain too much about yesterday. Donovan Smith, I thought it would be one of the key matchups against JPP. I didn't hear JPP's name all day, really. He didn't do much. And, you know, Jason Pierre-Paul is a player that can take over a game if you let him. But, you know, I like the way the offensive line played as a whole. Evan Smith has been, subbing in with Panfield a little bit. Why? I don't know. We'll see what the future is there. I mean, if you're a starter at offensive line and they're subbing somebody in, that means either you're not the future or you're just not playing that well. That's usually that easy. I mean, I've never been in a situation where somebody said, well, you got to come out and we got to sub players in. So there's got to be something going on there. Donovan Smith played well. As a tackle, obviously, you want to play beside the same person all the time. It gets a little bit easier. But he's got to be out there taking care of his business. And I thought he probably played about as well as I've seen him play in a while because I didn't hear his name. And Donovan Smith is one of those linemen you seem to always hear his name. And when you hear linemen's name, then it's usually not good. Okay, it's usually for jumping off sides or holding or something stupid like that or taking some really funky steps. Now, I'm going to say this. It was an experiment moving Ali Marpet to center. Listening to the Barber Boys talk yesterday on television, and they're saying, well, Ali Marpet's doing a great job at center, but we're really struggling at guard. And that made me say, yeesh. I tell you what, just the bad snaps. Okay, we're talking in the last 2 weeks, about 4 bad snaps a week, okay? A bad snap where Jameis has to catch the ball and roll out like when he doesn't want to, those, when you got to come off the field, that's like a sack or that's like a missed assignment. That's bad. We can't have that anymore. And I'm to the point now where I don't know if it's like the yips for Ali Marpet. This is new to him. It's not going to get any easier. And it's almost to the point now where I'm always saying put him back at guard. Because just those 4 snaps alone, they're hurting the Bucs right now. They're hurting them. And they're stopping drives. And you don't want Jameis Winston having to pick the ball up off the ground and take his eyes off the receivers and what's going on down the field. So you can tell it's kind of a glitch going on right now in his snap. And once he's doing something that's foreign, it's not something that he's really done, you know, his whole life. And to start doing something for the first time while you're in the NFL is a tough situation. So I'm thinking maybe you mess around and put Ali Marpet back at guard. Because I think, to be honest with you, I think we can run the ball a little bit better if Ali Marpet was playing guard. Like, your center is not the nucleus of your running game. The center is the guards are the nucleus of the running game. And I think that's probably what we need to do better than anything else right now is to get out there and start running the football, because if they start doing that, I think they're going to be an unbelievable offense down the road. Now, it's good to see Jameis growing up, and I was going to tweet out something. I didn't end up doing it, but you know, when the Buccaneers were close in this game at the end, I was going to tweet out, and if you want to follow me, at Ian Beckles, I was going to say, listen, the Bucs need to start learning how to finish. It's that time. If you want to take it to the next level, because, you know, every team can say, well, we had four games where we could have won. Okay, great. But that's the difference. Good, bad, indifferent. That's the difference. Finishing games. Okay? And that's the difference between every team. New England yesterday. New England started to lose close games. That's the difference. They're going to be in some close games, but New England always figures ways to win at the end. Now they're starting to lose some. Jameis was five for five in the winning drive. Got to feel good about that. Did some good things with his legs. He got some first downs with his legs. He extended some plays with his legs, and that's important. That's important because, you know, that is an added dimension that Bill Belichick has to deal with over there defensively with the Patriots. Now, the Patriots are coming in here to Raymond James on Thursday. Patriots are 2-2, which is, you know, you wouldn't think that's the case. It's barely ever the case. But it's a real 2-2. It's not like a lost a couple games, should have won 2-2. It's a real 2-2. The Patriots have given up 32 points a game. That's I wanna say that's the most in the NFL. 32 points a game. If you're giving up 32 points a game and you're 2-2, you're lucky that you're 2-2. Should be 1-3 probably, unless your quarterback is Tom Brady. So the Patriots are giving up the booty. I can't see a scenario where we stop the Patriots from scoring 35 points. I don't see a scenario like that. So if we beat the Patriots, we got to beat them 40-35. But I wouldn't bet on the Buccaneers defense stopping the Patriots for 35 points. It's ain't great. Bucs aren't a great defense yet. They're just not. Okay. Great defenses is hard to stop this Patriots team to 30 points or so. It's just tough. And Tom Brady's Tom Brady. It's a short week. It's going to be real hard to game plan for Tom Brady in a short week. I think it's hard to game plan for Tom Brady, period. And Bill Belichick, I guarantee, was starting that game plan probably last week, okay? I guarantee he was in there last week starting that game plan and getting ready for the Buccaneers. So the Buccaneers, first of all, they win the game, which is obviously the most important thing, okay? They're feeling good about themselves. They learned how to close a little bit. But now you got to take it to the next level, though, okay? You can't just keep on, you know, tit for tat kind of thing where you – and I'm not saying they played well. They played well enough to win yesterday. But that's all you need to do is play well enough to win as you're improving. And the Bucs are obviously still improving in a lot of different aspects of their football game. A lot. I'm scared of their depth. That scares me a little bit. Because they really, I mean, linebacker position, we've taken a couple hits, but I mean, really, I don't find that we've been crazy affected, although taking Quan Alexander and Levante David off a football field is going to affect everybody. That's just the way it goes. That's a lot of speed and a lot of plays right there. But I think they've survived that. I'm just scared of any other injuries going on, whether it be, you know, and I'm not trying to jinx anybody, okay? We just don't have any room to lose any of our stars. We don't have that many stars. We don't have any room to lose any more stars, we'll say. Now, the New England Patriots are a handful regardless. On national TV, you know, Tom doesn't play after a loss. And I said this last time. Last time the Patriots lost, I said, put money on the Patriots. The Patriots don't lose. They just don't lose two in a row. Now, that being said, maybe they're not the same team. Maybe the Patriots aren't the same team, but this would be the one team in the last dozen years that's not that team. In the last dozen years, it seems like when the Patriots lost a game, right after that they came back and they figured things out. I wouldn't want to be part of that squad in this short week with Bill Belichick having to go on the road. He's going to be a curmudgeonly old cat, and he's going to be, you know, asking a lot from his football players. But when it comes to the getting on the football field, all a lot of stuff that's said in the media, this is what I heard in the media a whole lot last week. Well, the Giants are not going to go 4-0. Why not? They went 3-0. The week before, they probably said the Giants aren't going to go 3-0. And next week, they're going to say they're not going to go it doesn't matter your mindset. Once the ball is snapped, it's football, and that's it. And you just have to outplay the other team. And we got an organization in here that's just not used to getting outplayed 2 weeks in a row. Carolina beat them. Carolina is looking pretty freaking wicked offensively. We're going to have to run into them eventually. But we have to start taking care of these, you know, non-division teams because we don't play anybody in the South till late. And by the time we start playing the teams in the South, we're going to start playing them in bunches, and it's going to get really, really important. But in the meantime, while we get there, like, we can't be 2 and 3 games out of first place because you're not going to sweep the South, that's for sure. By the way, all the teams in the South are playing pretty damn good football right now. The Saints are they're still questionable to me, the Saints. But everybody's playing pretty darn good football. So, you know, you can look around the South and say, you know, this team's helping us and this team's helping us. But the bottom line is, if the Buccaneers don't win 10 games, they don't go to the playoffs, period. And to win the South, you're going to have to win 11 games. That's the way it's going to be. So it's a good start. It's a good start. There's still a lot of things they need to improve on, and they know that. And I know Dirk Cutter, he's going to walk up there in front of the team today, congratulate them if they're there today, if not tomorrow. Congratulations, guys. They're probably not going to watch that film from yesterday because they won't have time. They're going to start moving forward to New England. Great effort, guys. Let's move on. We still have things to improve. A lot of times coaches will just show a few plays that need to be improved, okay? A couple missed assignments because obviously you don't want to be making the same mistakes over and over. But forget about that game. You beat the Giants. Thought you were a better football team than the Giants. We got that done. Now we got a bigger task at hand. And, you know, Tom Brady and Belichick and all those guys over there, that's a big task. Although not quite the same task as it's been in the past. 32 points a game they're giving up. So if you're Jameis and you're watching film, there's going to be lots of holes in there. There's lots of holes. If somebody's giving up 32 points a game, there's lots of holes all over that defense. And, you know, offensively, they're going to score some points. We know that. I mean, they're going to score points about against everybody. Not going to hold Tom Brady down for 4 quarters. So Thursday's going to be a shootout. I'm calling it. I don't know what the over-under is going to be, but my bet's going on the over, whatever that may be. I'm going to say it might be a 40-35 game, and that'd be fun to watch on Thursday night, that's for sure. I'm excited. It's football season. I get a chance to sit back on Sunday and watch a game I love all day long, and that just makes your mentality that much different. We got Monday Night Football, our Buccaneers in town on Thursday, national TV, New England Patriots in town, Giants just leave town. So, I mean, this is about as big time as it gets. So if you're a Buccaneer fans, and you got to enjoy yourself, and we're winning, you know. Think about this for 1 second. Mess around and beat the Patriots on Thursday night. Mess around and do that. See what happens. See what happens to the buzz, which is already out there. It's buzzing. It cooled down a little bit after Minnesota. It's going to pick back up. And this is one of those games that, if you remember way back when the Bucs beat the 49ers at home that time, I think that's when Sapp tore up Jerry Rice's knee. It seemed like that changes things around. Beating New England on national TV in front of everybody, everybody's watching on Thursday. Every single buddy is watching on Thursday. So that's a good time to get that thing popping. So not making any predictions. I just see a very high score game coming, and let's hope the Buccaneers can figure out ways to win at the end of the game. And listen, you can make plays against this Patriots defense. So feel good about yourself. Spread that plumage. You got a big victory, and let's figure out ways to beat New England. If you guys have any questions for me, I can be reached at ianbeckles@radioinfluence.com. I have another podcast, Flavor in Your Ear, which comes out on Fridays. And I'll be popping in with Mike Calta this morning at 10 o'clock. And I'm just kind of on the bone every once in a while. On Saturday, I have a new show with Ray Lampe from 1 to 3 called Flavor. And on Sunday, my show, Ian Beckles' show, is on 102.5 The Bone, 11 to 1. So I appreciate you guys listening in. You know, it's Buccaneers season. I think we're all rabid Buccaneer fans, and we're hoping for the best. And let's hope that the tone stays the same. My tone has been good to this point. You got to be happy where the Buccaneers are. 2-1, I think we'd all take that at the beginning. But it doesn't get any easier. It gets harder as we go. So this could be one of those games that either tells us we're not ready for prime time or kind of takes us over that to that next level. So looking forward to Thursday's game. I'm going to do In the Trenches next week. We're going to still do it on Monday. The game's going to be on Thursday. And Flavor in the Year, my other podcast, will be on Friday. So maybe I'll touch a little bit on the Buccaneers game. But this will be again on next Monday. So I'll be breaking down the game. I appreciate you guys being Buccaneer fans and just football fans in general. And I didn't talk about the anthem on purpose because I'm so tired of talking about that, because it's killing our country. Everybody enjoy your week. Go Bucks. Big, big win this week. Peace out.
Follow Ian Beckles on Twitter at Ian Beckles for all the latest on your Tampa Bay Buccaneers. You have been in the trenches with Ian Beckles on Radio Influence. This is a Landry Football with Chris Landry. Quick fix on Radio Influence.
Something that is topical, and I don't want to get into the a lot of details of the specifics of the whole college basketball scandal, but I want to at least touch on how it could have an effect and where this might affect future of college football. Is college basketball recruiting is different than college football recruiting, but there's certain elements that I think are transferable and potentially harmful as we go down the road of this path. But I want to, as it particularly pertains to the big news of the day yesterday with the firing of longtime athletic director Tom Jurich at Louisville and Rick Pitino, the basketball coach. Now, these are two guys that would not rank very high on the character list of individuals that, while they've had success at points and times in their careers, certainly in Tom Jurich's case has been an enabler. This is one of a long line of many issues that Rick Pitino's had off the field, scandals, not just minor things either, scandals. He would have never survived any of those had it not been for his success on the court as a basketball coach. But, you know, what does it really mean for Louisville and Bob Petrino, the football coach there? Remember that this was another character flawed guy that Tom Jurich hired, not once but twice at Louisville. Bob is mostly known for walking out on the Falcons and getting in a motorcycle accident and lying to his superiors at Arkansas about having an affair with a volleyball player / young office assistant that he hired. And he was known for those two things. But he's also known for a guy that is kind of underhanded in a lot of his dealings in the coaching profession. He's a guy that's got a huge, huge closet that's full of skeletons. And really, no one knew that more than Tom Jurich, but hired him a second time, but now he's gone. couple of things factually that you need to know. The buyout of, you know, if he were to leave, goes down by half if Tom Jurich is fired. Well, we know that the process of Tom Jurich's firing is undergoing right now. You know, for people who may be wondering, why didn't they just fire Patino and Jurich? Why do they go with the monkeying around of the suspensions and unpaid leave? Well, there are legal renderings here, and there's money being owed. In the case of Rick Pitino and his lawyer, he wants $44 million on top of, you know, the embarrassment of what he's done to himself, the sport, the university. He wants to be paid the $44 million. While that's unmitigated gall to the nth degree, this is what Louisville is legally fighting right now. So all the legal maneuverings of, you know, unpaid leave, they're gone. Tom Jurich and Rick Pitino, they're gone, and they won't resurface at Louisville, and maybe not anywhere. But what does it mean for Pitino? Well, it means that he can leave. Does he want to leave? I don't think there's any doubt that he's not going to be comfortable being at Louisville with a new administration that's going to have to clean things up. And I don't think he's going to fit the profile of a clean guy that they want leading their program into the future.
Chris Landry brings you Landry Football every week on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and, of course, RadioInfluence.com.